January 13, 2021, it's Walk for Pedro Show. Walk for Pedro show. look, I'm going to let you people in on something. It's not actually January 13th. Okay, because I know the truth would come out sooner or later, and, you know, there's enough fucking people trying to get away with bullshit these days, so I fucked up, people, and I got Brother Steve on the Skypeage here from the happy Los Feliz to try to fix a pilot error, a major pilot error. We can't blame equipment on this, people, but anyway, we started the show off with Welcome, Part 1. It was John Coltrane live at Newport, 1966. Tense gig for him, one of his last. And then Red Cross with Rich Bratt. But it's great honor to have Steve McDonald, a bass brother from Hawthorne. Let's recap. It's going to be weird for him because, you know, twofer, but he's a creative man. And Steve, your earliest music recollection, again, please.
Okay, well, the one I'm going, there's many recollections, but the one I like to brag about the most is my first choice of records. My mom took me to Munt's Stereos, which was the local record shop in Hawthorne, California, where I grew up, one day when I was probably about 5 years old, and she said, choose any two records. And my imagination now is maybe I got shots that day, you know, like maybe I had to get a booster shot.
She was You're talking about a vaccination, right?
And she said, pick out any two records. And like, yeah, maybe I got like a chickenpox. Well, I guess I didn't have chickenpox vaccination. You know, like maybe I got my rubella mumps or something. But at any rate, yeah.
And Munt's, if I can ask you, Steve, Munt's, they had like a guy looking like Napoleon all crazy ass.
Yeah, you remember Munt's. Yeah, I think they had a couple of the shops around the South Bay. There was one in Torrance too, I think. Yeah, there were stereo shops. He has a good Wikipedia page, if anybody want to look that up. But anyway, that's where I got my first records. And when my mom said choose two records, in 1972 at 5 years old, I chose the Rolling Stones. Live album, Get Your Ya-Ya's Out, and then I chose the Alice Cooper record with the snake on the cover, Killer, which I assume was probably a brand new record.
Yeah.
And it caught my eye in the front of the store.
I think Charlie Watts is on the cover of that Stones record.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah, yeah. It's a classic record. Yeah, Charlie's got the donkey with the... He's got a donkey with a drum strapped on it, and he's holding I think he's got, I think, it's hard to tell because it's just the side shot, but I think it's Bill Wyman's Fender Mustang bass in one hand, and then maybe, I forget what the other guitar is.
I got to tell you,
Les Paul.
You know, Bill Wyman, you know, Bill Wyman, really played bass funky the way he held it. I think he didn't put the strap over the right shoulder or correct shoulder, but he also pulled the frets out way before Jaco Pastorius.
He played fretless,
but like a made one, right? He actually has the first fretless before Jaco Pastorius. Nothing against Jaco. Although I'm kind of more of a Bill Wyman fan.
That would make sense. His form, the way he held the bass, he held the neck up really high.
Yeah.
Was playing a stand-up.
Okay, let's get into stand-up. You get into stand-up, right?
Yeah, he became a comedian.
No, stand-up bass. Well, you know what I did?
Yes,
I forgot to ask you yesterday. Was a 40? You know, over in the U.S., we use 3/4, right? The jazz guys use 41-inch scale. How did you fucking finger? Did you use a chair?
Oh, yeah. Well, let's see. Well, I was a tall kid. I think it was a three. You're talking about the stand-up bass that I played as a kid?
That's right.
Yeah, right. So I was in the school orchestra. That's true. Starting in, I guess it was fifth grade. And, I was probably maybe 5 foot tall then. I was kind of like... but hey, my playing sounded like it. I don't, basically what I learned how to play King of the Road, the riff, the bum, 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 ba dum, ba dum, ba dum, ba dum, which, you know, I didn't know that the tune, other than it was an Anheuser-Busch commercial at the time. I don't know if you remember that, but
Budweiser
used it as, but so I learned the Budweiser theme, and that was sort of really the main point with that, was to show my parents and to try to impress them, because the plot all along, the motivation with the stand-up bass, I wish I could say that I was an old school jazz head from day one. The only reason I wanted to play stand-up bass, because I had my sights set on getting an electric bass.
Right, it was a scheme.
It was a scheme, and in the Wiseburn School Orchestra, they always had a position open, the one electric instrument, the one instrument that could fit in a rock situation, was they allowed the electric bass in their orchestra, but you had to supply your own. So, but they had the stand-up basses, and I could take those home. And I learned how to play King of the Road, and also another song called Little Rock. But my parents got me. I was very, very lucky, and I think it was Christmas of '78. I was the proud new owner of a brand new Fender Music Master.
Now there was another scheme going on. Your older brother Jeff wanted you in the band.
Yeah, so Jeff had designs to start a band. And, you know, and that kind of came out of our inspiration from the new sounds of punk rock, informed by the Ramones, Sex Pistols, and the Runaways. And the Runaways most influentially, because they were teenagers. I mean, they were a few years older than me. I was like 10 years old at this time. But on the back cover of their first album, it said like Joan Jett, 16. Lita Ford, 17. And that seemed like, wow. And even though they sounded as professional as Kiss, they were kids, too. They were high schoolers.
I love Cherry Bomb. Cherry Bomb is the greatest song, Cherry Bomb.
Oh, yeah, it's a classic.
And I think a pioneer for them was somebody I saw open for Alice Cooper, Susie Quattro. Bass player.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's a great bass player. Are you a Susie Quattro fan yourself, Mike?
Absolutely. I saw her open for The Coop. I think her brother was on guitar.
Wow, that's great. Yeah. Wow. See, yeah. See, I didn't get to do that. I'm
48 Crash. 48 Crash. Glycerine Queen.
Oh, yeah. Glycerine Queen and Double Gate Drive.
So I thought, I know it was some, like, puppet show from Kim Fowley, supposedly, but they were, especially with Joan Jett, she was a lady of her own, man.
Yeah, yeah, they were true rocker. Well, clearly, you know, Lita and Joan, at least, have proven to be lifers.
Absolutely, absolutely. So they had a big influence on the Tourists.
Yeah, yeah, so our first band, Jeff and I put together, was called The Tourist, and The Tourists were comprised of my brother Jeff McDonald, who I still play in Red Cross with, and he's 3.5 years older than me, or almost 4 years older. And then our drummer was named John Stilo, and he was the kid that also played in the Wiseburn School Orchestra. He was in eighth grade when I was in sixth grade, and he was kind of really popular because he did the drum solo at the orchestra concerts before we went into...
Yeah, I got to tell the people, every high school, junior high school band, grade school in the 70s did a version of a Hawaii 5-0. Is that correct, Steve?
Yeah, we did too. And da 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 da. The bass was like bump, bump, bump.
Kick drum pattern. You know, but the big thing of that tune, though, is the fill. It's the fill. Doodle 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 doodle.
Yeah.
Don't say our love can't be. racing horses, Mr. Child is vaulting high. Mr. Child is joining forces, parachuting from a clear blue sky. Mr. Child knows his rope to roll with the punches and remain as a
talking about you. Phoenix Climb, relaxation time.
For Pedro show, we lost Steve for there. You know, his boy, it's remote schooling time, people, so he should get to Bogart the bandwidth more than these two old bass punk rockers, okay? So we heard Don't Turn Your Back on Me from Red Cross, Mr. Chad from Guided by Voices, Lies from the last, in fact, produced the first Red Cross, Joe Nolte. 43 from P. Kane.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true. Joe... Pete Kane with 43 from Back East, great new record from Pat Kane. Experimental Noise, Riff Loop at Witkun from Hans Rott in Switzerland. Bombus Prendon, Vacation A, Spiky Plant and Pearly Sculpture, Dustin Wong. Foodie would Tie Me Up from Osaka. That's some cool change, Sonny, for sure, from Biscuit Mouth out of England. And Sam Locke Ward with Pink Slime out of Iowa City. And finally, Fighting from Red Cross. And we're going to continue now on the development of the Torse.
Okay. So, Fighting from Red Cross, 2019. Now we're going back to 1979, and the band is forming, and I'm 11 years old, and it's my brother, Jeff McDonald, me, John Stilo, the drummer from our junior high school orchestra, and then Jeff meets a kid in his 10th grade photography class that is also taking pictures at punk gigs in Hollywood at the same time. And they notice this in the dark room. Like, Jeff is developing pictures of the Go-Go's, and this other kid is developing pictures of the Dickies. And they're only two kids probably within 20 square miles to have any idea what those pictures are. And they just happened to intersect with each other at Hawthorne High School. And it turns out that that kid is Greg Hetson, who later formed Circle Jerks and joins Bad Religion at some point. But first, he's at Hawthorne High as a senior. My brother is a sophomore. And Jeff finds out that Greg has a guitar and he wants to play in a band. And Jeff says, well, I'm starting a band with my brother. You should come over to our house and jam. And Greg comes over to our house, and much to his horror, I assume, he finds that the brother that Jeff was starting a band with is 11 years old. And he probably thought we were like, yeah, it was freaky or something. But it all turned out to be cool because Greg was somehow impressed. We had, you know, Jeff and I had already written a handful of songs. We had things like
In my school, you had the greatest backup vocal part with that falsetto. Your voice hadn't changed yet.
Yeah. Well, my brother always played the announcement of punk. And I had that real high voice. And yeah. So, but, you know, I lost that quickly. But I still try to sing in that range. It's crazy. Sounds different now, though.
Well, you know, the castrato option probably wasn't that much on the table. Thank God for your son.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us about the first tourist gig.
So the first gig, our first gig was playing an 8th grade graduation party at Hawthorne, and it was our drummer John's class that was graduating, and the girl in his class, Lisa Stengel, asked John, because she knew he had a band, if they would play her party, but she probably assumed that John's band was a stand-up band that would play backyard parties at that time, you know, the kind of band that would maybe do Heart, Barracuda. Maybe they might have done, you know, a rockin' version of a Rock and Roll by Led Zeppelin, or maybe a Kansas song or something. She had no idea that we were a punk rock band. She didn't know what punk rock was. And then we had just met Black Flag just prior to that, who were not really known. They'd only played a handful of shows locally. And we asked if we could invite our friends to come play. And she said, sure, you know, having ideas in the very early Black Flag pre-Red Cross tourist gig in her living room. And and that went fine. You know, the kids booed us, but we learned how to deal with an irate crowd from that show, and we gave it right back to them. When Black Flag played, all the kids were just kind of freaked out by these older dudes. And they just kind of left. They vacated the living room. And so we just got it's like a sort of like a private concert, like, you know, the sort of Nervous Breakdown era Black Flag in a living room in Hawthorne. It looked kind of like, you know, if you ever see that movie Boogie Nights, if anybody's ever seen the movie Boogie Nights, the first 10 minutes of that film, the star lives in Torrance, California, and they show the inside of his house. That's exactly what Lisa Stengler's house looked like. And imagine Black Flag playing in that living room.
I think in the real old days, they called that like a command performance for the king or some shit.
Yeah. But then our first kind of real proper gig was at the Pollywog Park in Redondo Beach. That's notoriously known as the Black Flag Riot at Pollywog Park. And we supported Black Flag at this park in Redondo Beach, California. And it was this Sunday afternoon event where families were just picnicking, having a good time. It was sort of like a light jazz series. Somehow Black Flag had managed to trick the officials and gave them gave them some like Fleetwood Mac demos or something as their audition with them. Black Flag put together the bill, and anyway, that turned into a notorious food fight, to say the least, or maybe it was also known as a riot. But when we played, people were just kind of nice to us.
Now later you played Above the Bookstore at Harbor College with the Minuteman.
That's true. Well, okay, yeah. Another thing I'd like to brag about, Mike, is that I love to brag about that. Well, your band and pre-Minutemen, the Reactionaries.
That's right.
Played with Black Flag and Prince Gig. You told me about. You told me the other day that you informed me that was the first Descendants gig.
That's right.
At a Teen Post in San Pedro. In Pedro. Right. At the Teen Post. I was at that gig when I was 11 years old. I saw you guys play. So I go way back. The legacy of Watt from Pedro.
That's right. All the way. The cops had to lock us in, and you said your parents were sitting in a Toyota waiting for you.
Yeah, 69 Corona. Yeah, it was a really sweet little four-door. Yeah, they're so cool. They actually stood aside and waited for us. I mean, that was kind of a rough part of town. And then, and like you said, the cops actually locked everybody in. There was some craziness going on.
I mean, that was because the neighborhood wanted to kill. I mean, there was a guy with that neighborhood, very ethnic. They didn't know about a Clash song called White Riot. You wear that on your jacket and then wreck their fucking Teen Post? Yeah, crazy ass. So tell me about the first Red Cross recording at Media Art in Hermosa Beach.
Right, okay, so that was the first place I recorded. I believe that's the first place you recorded, right?
Absolutely.
Or that's where Minutemen did their first recordings.
That's right.
Yeah, good, and it's the same place where Black Flag did their Nervous Breakdown EP and all that jazz. But the first Red Cross demo, which I think you'll play a track from that. Oh, you already played a track. Rich Rat was from that demo.
That's right.
And that was recorded at Media Art with Joe Nolte as our producer and Spot behind the knobs, engineering. Another thing I like to also brag about is that I was 11, and I paid for that demo with my Daily Priest paper route.
Wow.
And those deadbeats in my group, our guitar player was 18 years old. He had a car. And as far as I know, I was the only person that laid down the green to make that session happen.
I paid for ours, too. We did Paranoid Time, and one night it was $300, mixed and recorded, and I flowed the bones. Maybe that's what bass dudes are kind of for, too.
Yeah, I guess that's our cross to bear. Yeah, I think we have low self-esteem. We think we have to pay for the demo or the...
Well, for us, it ended up our first record. Yeah, 002, SST-002.
Oh, cool. Yeah, right. Did that have your Tyrannosaurus Rex cover on it?
Raymond did the cover, and it was Greg's idea. Raymond did all the lettering.
No, the song. Remember you guys used to do that song Prelude from Off the Stars?
Yeah, that was put on some compilation. Called Life is Something or Other, and then it ended up on My First Bells. And they all had Raymond covers. That's right. And they all had Raymond Pettibone covers.
Yeah, Gary Cale.
That's
of course.
It.
Yeah. No, I don't know what happened to him.
Me either.
I
think he was a Lawndale or a Hawthorne or...
Yeah, he's a Lawndale guy.
Okay, Lawndale.
Yeah, and then they later did Mood of Defiance, so were pretty good. I don't know if you remember Mood of Defiance.
With the lady singer.
Yeah, with the Hotha. Rachel.
Something.
She changed her name to Hotha.
Yeah.
they had a good record, I remember. I played with them once at Ascot. But remember Ascot Motor Speedway?
Absolutely. Where the Harbor and San Diego freeways collide! Yeah, AC Agajanian. They still got a building here in Pedro. But I used to use my newspaper money to go see Speedway and Doom Buggy, Figure Eight Racing, and blow your fucking ears out, Sprint Car.
Okay.
Now this demo, doesn't this get turned into a record by Posh Boy?
Now, we re-recorded all the stuff.
Oh, it's a re-recording.
So the demo is now coming to light.
Oh, the demos are out there.
Those demos, we just reissued them this year as the sort of a 40th anniversary package on Merge, because I'm 1980, our first EP came out on Poshboy, but we did some 79, so we included the demos, and then we put the Poshboy EP. Plus, we did one bonus track, which another bonus track, which is a recently recorded of the Tourist live at the church, the famous church.
Sure, the church was a big. It was a practice, actually, a community center thing. It wasn't a church anymore, but. Greg Ginn had his SST solid state electronics, right? His ham radio antenna tuner. I soldered a little a thing. How did you meet Robbie Poshboy?
Oh well, we when we played our first gig at an actual club in Hollywood, it was Chinatown. We played the Hong Kong Cafe with Black Flag, and I think. My memory was UXA were the headliner, so it was UXA, Black Flag, and Red Cross, and Robbie Fields was there. What's that?
D Detroit.
And Robbie Fields was there, and he had just started Poshboy Records, and I think maybe the Beach Boulevard record might have already. Or no, it was the Rick L. Rick.
F-word
album. I think maybe you put that.
Which was so trippy because they cover a Germ song.
Yeah, well, that was a great record. You mean that live at the Mabuhay?
Yeah, they do Shutdown.
It's great. Yeah. They cover Shutdown, and then Dirk Dirksen, the promoter of
Mabuhay.
Yeah, he introduces them and cuts them down for 10 minutes. It's pretty great.
He used to do it to us, too. He'd look at our set list and go, what's this, the history of fucking music?
I think it was so long.
Yeah. But it was only 20 minutes, you know, 30 songs in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Look, we're at the end of the first hour on the kind of January 13th, 2001 edition of the Wofford Peter Show special guest. Thanks, brother Steve McDonald. Hold tight for hour two. January 13th, 2021. It's the second hour of the Wofford Peter Show. Yeah.
Heard my father falling, falling off the mountain. He couldn't see the moon floating on the river. Above a flock of birds was passing through the night sky. I counted every feather and then set off walking. So hear me now. So hear me now. So hear me now. I'm on my way to Fun Town. Heard a baby crying. The wind was blowing the sound out across the graveyard. A train was passing by. A sudden rainfall, some lightning struck her gravestone. So hear me now, so hear me now, so hear me now. I'm on my way to Fun Town. I dropped a dollar bill. The ground began to tremble. I saw a woman crawling toward a smokestack. Some distant planet's ocean. So hear me now. So hear me now. So hear me now. I'm on my way to Fun Town. To Fun Town. Fun time. Fun time.
cause I was very young. But now you'll teach him, and I've made me strong about love, peace, and happiness. Now I'll pass it all along.
Watch for Pedro show. We start off the second hour with Dale Crover Band. That's Melvin drummer sometimes.
Yeah.
I can't help
and
you there.
Also, Dale plays in Red Cross, too.
I didn't know that. Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, Red Cross has gone through a lot of drummers. A lot of second guitar players, Red too. Okay. Sam Bennett after that, Fun Town. Quiet Pig from, and that's Tokyo. Sam's been there 25 years. Quiet Pig out of Italy with Black Hole. Pisa, I think. No. I can't remember fucking what. Dr. Herman Green, we just lost him in November from Memphis. Earth Mother, Jerome Parker Wells out of St. Louis, passed over and expecting from the White Stripes, comma, Red Blood Cells. So it might have been a collab, right, Steve? Anyway, let's get back to the story of the first Taurus gig.
The first Taurus, yeah, that's right. So you just asked me, was I nervous to play that show? And I said, yeah, I was shitting bricks.
Yeah.
Did you say that on the one
well,
show?
And in Peebo, we say shitting pecan log. Oh, you want it rough.
Well, I was,
you know, that's like the...
I was shitting that too.
That's like the pecan Creams. Log. Yeah, that's like the Creams Proud Mary versus the Tina Turner Proud Mary.
Wait, hang up for 1 second. My voice now.
What's that?
All right. Okay. Thanks, Alfie. Yeah, I'm being a dad right now.
That's okay. That's okay. He's the next shift. You got him an electric bass yet? Stand up.
Yeah. No. He's not so interested right now. He's more of a basketball.
You know, it's a trip. Last month or a couple months ago, I had Ian McKay on. He said his son ain't interested in music either.
Yeah, it's,
yeah, but you doing? Can't push them, right? They got to find their own way. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what did the name? You got through that gig, and you, but then
just to tell you really quick, I was shooting bricks, and then the kids were yelling at us, and they didn't like us. They booed us.
Ah, okay, okay.
So we learned quickly how to deal with a rowdy crowd and an irate. Crowd and
we had a lot of those.
Okay, you know what?
We had a lot of those opening for Black Flag, right? Also.
Black Flag was sort of an unknown quantity at this moment, but Black Flag just kind of cleared the house altogether. The eighth graders didn't know what to think about them, but with us, they felt emboldened to give us a hard time because they were our age group, and we were playing Annette's Got the Hits and punk rock tunes and. So we just told them, okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, we're going to play a Led Zeppelin cover. He said, we're going to play an unreleased Led Zeppelin cover. And I don't know why they thought we would know unreleased Led Zeppelin music. I guess the funny thing is that Led Zeppelin would have had unreleased music at that point. They were still together. But I don't know. Anyway, so we just played like a Teenage Jesus kind of noise jam. And at first they kind of thought, got into it, and then they realized, wait, this isn't Led Zeppelin, and then they start booing again. So we learned those kinds of tricks early on. And then Black Flag played after us, and all the kids just split.
I got to tell people, that's a Lydia Lunch Band, people. And Bob Quine put out that record, Orphans. What I love was the credit for the drummer, Bradley Delp, drum. It wasn't drums. It was drum. Like the dude just played a snare
drum.
So when does the name get changed from Taurus to Red Cross?
Yeah. We did that when we first did our first gigs, like at a nightclub, an actual venue with, we did one with Black Flag. It was right when Black Flag started first playing gigs in, up in Hollywood or in downtown. And we played a gig with them at the Hong Kong Cafe. And I think it was with UXA, maybe, were the headliners, and Black Flag were in the middle. And anyway, at that point, we had learned that the Taurus, that band name already existed. It was a new wave band in England, who later turned out to be Annie Lennox and Dave Stewart of the Eurythmics. Their first new wave band was called the Taurus.
Okay.
Of course, they didn't have the SoCal Beach point of reference.
But they were first, and that's more important.
Yeah, so we changed our band name, and I think we just kind of, I don't know where we came up with it. I think we liked the idea. It sounded good with Black Flag.
Can I tell you the Hong Kong Cafe gig I saw Red Cross at?
Yeah, what was that?
Ron Quits on stage.
Oh, Ron. No, that was at King's Palace.
Was it? Okay, which turned into Raji's. Yeah,
well,
okay.
Later known as Raji's, but yeah, well, you would have saw a lot of, you played a lot of early gigs. I mean, you know, Mike, I saw the Reactionaries play at the Teen Post in San Pedro.
Yeah, yeah, on Mesa.
You know, I was there early days.
Cops had to lock people in just because the neighborhood wanted to kill everybody.
Totally, that's true. And you know who were outside of the venue that night? My parents in their 1969 Toyota Corona. They brought us and they waited in their little Toyota as the cops were, you know, locking everybody into the Teen Post.
It was first Descendants gig also. Look, I want to play That Dog, Bird on a Wire.
Why am I surprised?
that dog, Bird on a Wire, plus Dog Plus, the Knowing Of, and then like the Blank Generation Richard Hell album with the underlying You Make Me Blank, I guess. By the way, he just re-released a Destiny Street. Now, the new Harnessians with Blank State. I guess they're into harnesses. Double Dutch Picnic with Devil's Gold, and finally Off with Blast. I remember there was a Black Flag band on SST that actually sounded like Black Flag. Not Overkill, but Blast.
Yeah.
Because usually they didn't do that. Greg picked bands that didn't sound like their band, which I thought was interesting. So, you know, an interesting Red Cross version I really liked was when you had Janet Housen and Dezzo. Of course, with Janet.
Oh, yeah, 83. That's around 83.
Man, that, to me, that was my favorite. I really dug that. And it didn't last long. You guys did a Blue Cheer cover, Out of Focus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. With the wow wow.
Yeah, Dezzo definitely brought a lot of that into the band.
Well, Dezzo, I think because his daddy, Ozzy, was a producer, and he just had why. He turned the Minutemen onto that Curtis Live record, Curtis Mayfield. He would play all kind. Yeah, his music mindset, it was more than Led Zeppelin, you know. It was all kinds of stuff, and he was very. But how did he get in the band?
Dez? Well, Dez was in the band twice at different times.
Yeah, I know, but this time I'm talking about.
At that point? So Dez was in the band before he was in Black Flag.
Yes.
And then he did the Black Flag thing, the Black Flag singer, and then he was Black Flag guitarist.
Yeah, right.
And then after that phase ended, then he rejoined Red Cross. And at that point, everybody had grown their hair out, and we were starting to, you know, reinvestigate some of that music from the 60s and 70s.
Oh, so you're saying he was a former member? Oh, okay, he was actually in there before Black Flag. Okay, I didn't know that.
Because there was a brief period, like you just talked about how Ron quit Red Cross on
stage. Right.
And then, so after Ron quit Red Cross on stage, then soon after Greg Henson quit too, to start Circle Jerks, and then we became a five-piece, and we had Dezzo on guitar, and we had Chet Lear, later of Wasted Youth, on second guitar, and my brother was just stand-up singer. And in fact, looking through old flyers that I see on social media now, I think one of the very first Minutemen shows, that lineup of Red Cross played with the Minutemen at the Harbor College.
You're right.
Opening for the Plugs.
Above the bookstore at the Seahawks Center. You're right. Fucking
that
would
have
memory.
Been the five-piece version of Red Cross. It was like 3 days after my 13th birthday.
Okay, yeah, I remember that gig totally. Except I can't remember the drummer.
His name is Johnny Lubo.
Okay.
Or also known as Johnny Nobody, and he was only in the band for that brief period.
Get this! That gig with the Minutemen, that's what, you know, the original Minutemen drummer, Frank Tosh, he was only in the band two gigs, and that was the second gig. He even left his drum set. He said, fuck this scene, a bunch of crazy people. Look right there.
Was that the first Minutemen gig? Was
no,
that
the second.
Second Minutemen gig.
And then
well,
he
quits. Okay, I like to wear that as a badge of honor that I was on the bill for the second Minutemen gig.
You were. We're at the end of the second hour. January 13, 2021. It's not for me to say that.
And we're still in 1980.
Hold tight for hour three, right? January 13, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro show.
Holy Ghost, when do you come out to play? Because if the Lord is going to find me, he better start looking today. I took my baby at the store. Spent the weekends setting traps in the road I should have been, crawling out my eyelids. You'll never guess what baby did when she got home. Oh, make mistakes. For all my big mistakes.
Yeah.
Well, for Pedro, shall we start off the third hour with fun, with doing Benson Hedges and Crane with Brothers and Sisters? Dr. Dracula, who makes you get high from the World Infernal Friendship Society. Fatso Jetson, that's Mario Lali and his brother. Golden Age of Cell Block Slag. Vince Maroney plays on this too. Paul Ellis with David Gerard doing Mirage. Tollum and Dietrich. John Dietrich from Deerhoof with 01. Finally, Melvin's with a Beatle cover. I Want to Hold Your Hand. So,
yeah.
You know, this first tune, Fun, you're right. This is the first time Fun's been on this show. But what's important, though, you're a producer, man. You graduated from, like, a bass man for your brother's band to a producer, man. That's beautiful.
And then, I graduated and then eventually made my way back. So, yeah, I've worn quite a few hats at this point, Mike. You know, kind of like you. You know, I've been in other people's bands. I've done my own band. And then have you ever produced anything for anybody else?
Oh, yeah. But you know what I found out about through my journey in music? It's about taking turns. That's how you really learn. That's the way life is. It's not about, I mean, the way they some people put it is like, yeah, being the boss is winning. But if you're always the boss, you can't learn everything. You're always getting your way. Yeah. It's good to take turns. If you're going to give direction, learn how to take direction yourself. Anyway, tell me about your producer thing.
You know, whatever. I've been engineering. At some point, I just got into, you know, learning how to turn the knobs as well. So like 20 years ago, when I got my first computer, I got Pro Tools. And that's where you played that White Stripes song earlier. That was one of the earlier things I did where I at the time, Red Cross, really briefly, Red Cross went on hiatus from 1998 to 2006. And in that time, I didn't really have a band. And I went to school, I learned some music theory, I started producing for other people, then I started playing in other people's bands. I played bass in Beck for a little while. I played bass for Sparks for like 5 years, you know, this town I'm big enough for the both of us, Sparks. And then I also produced other people. But I think I always kind of longed having my own band. I missed not having my own band. And that was why I ended up playing on that White Stripes thing. But I like being in a supportive role. It's something I like to do. It's kind of like you're saying, you know, it makes you a more well-rounded individual to learn what it's like to be supportive, you know, to be the things, you know, to treat people the way you want to be treated yourself in all capacities. And so, you know, it's something I really like to do, and I've learned how to, you know, turn some knobs and not screw things up too much. And, you know, I like to do that. But,
Steve, can I volunteer a perspective? I don't mean to interrupt, but I think you and me both being bass guys, and the politics of bass is we look good making the other cats look good. So I think that empathy thing, because we're kind of glue people, right?
Well, we're also accompaniment guys.
Yeah. Well, I was using glue as a metaphor. I wasn't saying we were exactly glue. And what's glue? Sorry to get all sophisticated, but you know what glue is.
You provide the glue. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's true. But we kind of bridge things.
So but Steve, what's glue with nothing to stick to?
Yeah.
It's a puddle. It's a fucking puddle, right? So we need things. We got to be accompanying this. So I think it's kind of this thing where you said, I try to turn the knobs where I don't fuck things up. See, that's a responsibility. I think that comes from being a bass dude. A real bass dude.
Yeah.
Not a fake lead guitar guy who has four big strings or six or ten. What do they do now? 12 string basses?
Yeah, I think it's true. Yeah, I think you and I, we're both people that... we like to stick to things. It's true. And so I like to be in a supportive role, and you know, and I can do the other thing too. I can lead people through the trenches, and hopefully, you know, with very few casualties. But it's not my fantasy to all the time to be doing that all the time.
Okay. Yeah, I think maybe some strategies is, if I'm not leading, I'm losing. And that's fucking ridiculous, right? I want to play
something. That's a drag. I agree.
You know, We should have played this early on, but I'm going to play the tours. Fun with Connie. Live at the church.
Live at the church, yeah.
pocket of air.
Here. Photos of her children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. Happy Easter, Meemaw, drawings on a refrigerator front full of notes. Mr. McFeely held in place by a church magnet. It's up to you. I can do all things through Christ. We ate breakfast while she lay in bed. Here, not here. The children and their children wandering into the back room. One more visit, one last time. There are still cookies here whenever the kids visit.
Yeah.
Last music for this edition. Yeah, Fun with Connie, Live at the Church with Taurus and off-air people. And we were doing the old stroll down Sentimental Lane there. And,
right. So that's when George Hurley rejoined, or started playing with Miniman for the first time, as the other half of the rhythm section with Mike Wong.
Yeah, he learns all the songs in 3 weeks, and we go into the studio, Media Art in Hermosa Beach with Spot and Greg, and we do Paranoid Time in one night, recorded and mixed it.
That's right. It was amazing. Recording session, too, Media Art, and with Spot, and we used Joe Nolte was our producer.
Ah, Joe Nolte lives in Pedro now. Do you know that?
Oh, does he?
Yeah, I wouldn't shoot you.
Tell him I said hi if you see him.
I will. Marty with Individual, Tim Holhouse with Underneath, When Nativity Splits Human, Resonate from Transit Drumming, Whenever the Kids Visit by Phil Venable. Finally, Red Cross with Hazel Eyes.
Oh, cool.
Not green eyes like Husker Du, but hazel eyes. My pop's eyes were hazel, because hazel changes. Like when he got pissed off, they went from that green to the fucking slate gray.
That's when you knew you were in trouble.
Yeah. So these days, are you collabing over the internet? Are you trading files with people? Are you composing? Are you recording?
Yeah, I'm doing a little bit of all of it. I've been getting together with the Melvins, and we've been doing some, you know, I'm sort of, I guess, a little bit in a bubble with those guys. We've been doing some stuff over at Toshi Kasai's place, who you know, of course. And so we've done some of those online events with the Melvins. And then, I've done some, I'm mixing a record for a punk rock band from Australia called Grindhouse. Playing a little bass for some people. People reach out, I'll play on your track, you know, and stuff like that, you know, because I've got a little studio here at the house. And then...
you collabed. Who put that together? Bruce Duff?
Oh, yeah, right. That was early on. You mean the flat and the curve thing?
We
both played on that. Yeah, exactly.
We had three, and I think
that was early on. It was early on in the pandemic.
And Norwood, too. There's three bass guys.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I forgot that you and I have, we've collabed at this point. You know, someone brought up to my attention recently, I get a thank you on an early Minutemen record because you borrowed my bass amp.
That's right.
Does that sound familiar? Did you?
Yes, it's one side of Buzzer Howl under the Influence of Heat, and Spot recorded it live to 2-track for $50. And your amplifier is on Little Man with a Gun in His Hand, the product, and I felt like a gringo.
I love that. Mortalized. Well, you know that was probably the amp that I bought in Hermosa Beach, or maybe in Manhattan. It was it had on it stenciled on it. Rufus. It was like a Rufus and Chaka Khan.
Yeah. Tell me something. Well, man.
So cool.
Yeah, we got connects going way back. It's been a big honor. I got to get you back on the show. We missed out on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, well, you've played tunes from all different eras of my journey, but just our stories, we're still in like 1983. I'll do it anytime.
Okay. When I get it open, I'm doing 5 shows a week now, and I'm booked up into April.
That's amazing.
Well,
that's
so I'm going to sit on my hands and complain, right? Music's going to save our fucking lives.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's cool. I really love your show. I think you're really good at doing this, and it's an honor to be a part of it. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Right back. And you're going to be on as soon as I get an opening. I maybe next month or so, because I could talk to you fucking forever and a day. Love you, Steve. People, it's been a January 13, 2021 edition of Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.